Story number one, a creepy story posted by Mother of X-Men, who I would call Jane, who posted their story on a Reddit post titled, "For Those Who Believe in Ghosts, What Was the Exact Experience That Turned You from a Skeptic into a Believer?" Jane had been working in the same restaurant for years. When she first started working there, her coworkers would casually joke about the upstairs dining area and how it was supposedly haunted by the ghost of a young woman who had once dined there and couldn't pay the bill. Now, if that insinuates something happened to her because she couldn't pay up, we don't know. But all we know is she has never left. And whenever this story was told, they'd all be literally laughing their asses off. Nobody took it really seriously, though. I mean, for all we know, it's probably just a scary story to scare new hires. Anyways, this was a running joke until things really did get real. And over the years, Jane would hear plenty of strange accounts from other coworkers. But despite working late night shifts and closing the restaurant night after night, she had never experienced anything herself, which is strange, because if you were closing every night, I would think that you'd have a higher chance of experiencing what everyone else is experiencing. The layout of the restaurant placed the staff lockers and the host stand directly beneath the staircase leading up to the supposedly haunted dining area. One evening during closing, Jane walked over to her locker to grab something from her purse while chatting casually with the host. In the middle of their conversation, the unmistakable sound of footsteps echoed above them, quick, deliberate, as if someone had just run down the staircase. She paused and glanced towards the staircase, frowning. "Why is someone up there?" she asked, slightly annoyed. The upstairs section had already been closed for the night. The host didn't even look surprised. Calmly, he replied, "No one's up there. That happens all the time." And with a frank grin, he added, "It's the ghost." Jane laughed it off, rolling her eyes at the suggestion. Determined to prove it was nothing, she headed upstairs herself. The air felt still as she reached the top. One by one, she checked every room. Every door was closed. Every chair was in place. The entire floor was empty and silent. Finding nothing, Jane dismissed it as nothing more than just sounds from an old building. With a shrug, Jane went back downstairs and continued her closing duties. And about 30 minutes later, the restaurant was completely empty. Everyone else had gone home, leaving her alone to finish up and set the alarm. But the system refused to arm. A warning appeared. A door somewhere in the building was still open. Her stomach sank slightly when she checked the panel and saw the location of the issue. Upstairs. Letting out a quiet sigh, she made her way back up the staircase. The silence of the empty restaurant now feeling heavier than before. When she reached the upstairs dining area, she immediately saw the problem. The door leading out to the patio stood wide open. That alone didn't make sense. The door was heavy, the kind that didn't move easily and certainly didn't stay open unless someone was physically holding it open. She stepped into the room, and it was like the moment she crossed the threshold, the door shut with force. The sound echoed sharply throughout the empty space, making her freeze in place. There was no breeze, no one else in the building, no logical explanation for why these heavy-ass doors could have been open. And for the first time since she started working there, she felt it. That unmistakable sensation that she was not alone. She quickly closed up, finished setting the alarm, and left the building without looking back. And from that night on, she never went back upstairs alone again. Every closing shift ended the same way, with someone accompanying her to check those doors, just in case whatever lingered there decided to make itself known again. Story number 2. Our Mimic Showed Itself. Posted by GhostGirl324, who I will refer to as Amanda. Amanda had lived in the house for nearly 5 years, and from the beginning, something about it had felt wrong. Unlike the rest of her family, Amanda considered herself to be sensitive to the paranormal. She would notice things that others usually brushed off, strange sounds, and the overwhelming sense of being observed when no one was there. Over time, those feelings sharpened into something more tangible. Both she and her 12-year-old son had begun to hear it. At first, it was small things. A sneeze from another room when no one was there. A voice calling out, perfectly mimicking a family member. And even the distinct, familiar sounds of their cats. Soft footsteps. A sneeze. A meow. Only to find the cats in a totally different part of the house. And mind you, this activity would only be experienced mostly at nighttime. They had come to believe that what they have been experiencing is a mimic. Essentially something mimicking either another family member or their cats to convince them that it's the real them, even though it's not. But still, at this point, it's only been sounds. They've never actually seen anything. Until one night. The house was unusually empty. Amanda's children were away on vacation with their granny, leaving only her and her husband at home. The silence felt heavier than usual, pressing in around her as she went about her routine. When Amanda stepped into the shower, she noticed her oldest cat nearby. But as the water ran and steam filled the room, the cat's behavior suddenly changed. The cat's fur puffed up, her body stiffening, and she began to hiss at the bathroom door, which Amanda left open because it was just them. From behind the shower curtain, she tried to soothe her. She spoke gently, reassuring the cat, telling her to calm down. But the unease began to creep in, slow and cold. As she rinsed the shampoo from her hair, that's when she saw it. Through the thin, translucent curtain, she would see a figure standing in the doorway. It looked exactly like her husband. Same height, same build, same outline she knew all so well. But something about it was wrong. It stood too still, too quiet. There was no shift in posture, no casual movement, no life in it at all. It simply watched. Startled, she laughed nervously. Jesus, baby, you scared me, she said, her voice echoing slightly in the steamy room. But the figure didn't respond, didn't move, didn't breathe. A sudden, crushing sense of dread filled her chest. It came without warning, overwhelming and absolute. Her heart began to pound violently, each beat louder than the last. Every instinct screamed at her to not get closer, not to pull back the curtain. But instead, she splashed water on her face, trying to steady herself, trying to shake the feeling. But when she looked again, it was gone. The doorway was empty. The tension didn't leave with it. If anything, it deepened. She quickly shut off the water, grabbed a towel, and rushed out of the bathroom. Her skin still wet, her breathing uneven. She hurried to the bedroom, and there in the dim light was her husband, fast asleep, completely still but in a natural way, his chest rising and falling, his body relaxed beneath the covers. But the strange thing was, he wasn't wearing the same clothing as the figure that she had just seen, not even close. The realization hit her all at once. Whatever had been standing in that doorway, it hadn't been him. And for years they heard it. Voices, sounds, perfect imitations. But this was the first time that it had shown itself. The first time that it had taken a physical form. And worse, she had spoken to it. There was a cardinal rule that she had always believed in when it came to things like this. Never acknowledge it. Never give it attention. Never let it know you're aware. Standing there in the dark, heart still racing, she couldn't shake the feeling that she had just broken that rule, and that something, somewhere in the house, now knew she had. Story number 3, a creepy Disneyland story posted by BJ420 on one of my Instagram videos. I will refer to him as BJ. For several years, BJ worked as a custodian at Disneyland California Adventure, a job that placed him in the park long after most guests had gone home. One of his regular assignments was cleaning the Hyperion Theater after the final show of the night, a task that sounded simple but never felt that way. Once the doors closed and the crowds disappeared, the theater transformed. What had once been loud and alive with music, applause, and movement became something else entirely. Vast, hollow, oppressively quiet. The towering ceilings and endless rows of empty seats seemed to swallow sound, leaving only the faint echo of his own footsteps and the soft scrape of his broom across the floor. It always felt off. Not necessarily dangerous, but off in a way that he could never fully explain. One night, as BJ worked his way along the front row near stage left, something pulled his attention upward. Movement. BJ glanced towards the upper balcony just in time to see a figure sprinting across it, fast, purposeful, heading straight for the elevator tucked along the wall. The figure moved with urgency, too quick to make out any details, but unmistakably human. Before he could even process it, he noticed the elevator call button illuminate, a button out of view. Someone had pressed it. His first thought was practical. A guest had somehow slipped into the theater after closing. It wasn't supposed to happen, but it wasn't impossible. Determined to intercept them, he immediately made his way to the exit. Through the exit near the large queue area, positioning himself where he could clearly see the elevator doors once they opened. If someone had gone up there, they had to come down. He waited. Now keep in mind, the park was not closed yet. This wasn't some encounter that would happen after hours, so a guest sneaking in was probably the best explanation. And just a moment later, the elevator door slid open. He stared, expecting someone, anyone, to step out. But no one did. The elevator stood empty. A chill crept up his spine as confusion gave way to something heavier. There was no alternate path down from that balcony. No hidden exit. No way for someone to leave without passing directly through this line of sight. And yet, no one had. Uneasy, BJ stepped back inside the Hyperion Theater. The vast room greeted him with the same suffocating stillness as before. Rows of seats sat undisturbed. The balcony above was silent and empty, and there was no sign that anyone had ever been there. Whatever he had seen, whatever had run across that balcony, hadn't left the way it should have. BJ didn't linger too long after that, abandoning any sense of routine or thoroughness that he usually would have. He would rush through the rest of his cleaning as quickly as possible, and he got out of that theater as fast as he could, leaving the silence and whatever might still be inside it behind him. You guys know I love telling scary stories, but did you know I also like to cook? Now, when I cook, I'm always looking for high-quality meats, and given that I do a lot of online ordering, selecting any sort of meat is always like a gamble. Am I going to get something fresh, or will it be the old meat that's almost off the shelf? Because of that, I'm anxious to order any sort of meat online, and I often have to visit the store in person to pick the quality meat that I want. But what if I told you there's a different solution to all of this? Now, as you may know, I love scrolling Reddit, and I came across this company many people kept posting about named Omaha Steaks, a company that's been around for over 100 years with the same quality meat that you can get at the highest rated restaurants around. Whether it's ribeyes for a special date night with a horror movie, hamburgers for a campfire with some scary stories, or a juicy sausage that you can cut up into tiny pieces in the kitchen, Omaha Steaks has it all. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging, and is shipped nationwide, arriving frozen and ready to grill, sear, and roast with minimal effort and time. And did you know that they have this really cool offering called the Burger Perfection Flight? For just $79.99, you can get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of steak, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. I can't wait to try this flight. I already have my order in, and it's going to be here in no time, and I'll let you guys know just how good it is. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. A creepy story posted by Sorry I Stole Your Bike on a Reddit post titled, What is your most interesting Ouija board story? I will refer to the protagonist as Steven. Steven grew up in South Jersey, and during one summer, he and his friends got obsessed with ghost hunting. They chased the stories all over the state, visiting the Jersey Devil Ruins, the Devil's Tree, Hooker Man, Shades of Death Road, Clinton Road, and the eerie stretches around Sweetwater and Batstow. Each place carried its own reputation, its own tension, but nothing that truly pushed beyond unsettling until the night they decided to use a Ouija board. The plan was simple. They were to meet at a local cemetery where they would link up with a friend of Steven's roommate who went by the name of Death Crow. They had been warned ahead of time. Don't ask his real name, and don't treat anything that night like a joke, because Death Crow was deep into the world of the paranormal. It was his entire personality. When they arrived, Stephen immediately understood why. Death Crow, which we'll call DC from now on, stood quietly apart from the group. His black hair was tied back into a ponytail, and a long braided goatee hung from his chin. He barely spoke, but his eyes moved carefully from person to person, studying each of them, sizing them up when they all arrived. And for once, Steven's group, filled with 20-something-year-old ball busters, dropped their usual sarcasm and forced themselves to be respectful of DC's plans. DC explained that the cemetery was a hotspot. Before anything else, he would split the six of them into pairs and would send them out to walk the grounds, calling it a way to warm up. And as Stephen moved between the headstones in the dark, he felt it. That strange, familiar shift. He had experienced things before, things that he couldn't fully explain. He believed every energy played a role in places like this. And the more attention you gave it, the more something seemed to give back. Now, this group wasn't their usual crowd. Most of them leaned toward believing, but a few of them he deemed to be an actual skeptic. 30% of the group, if he had to measure it. After about 20 minutes, they regrouped at the steps of a large mausoleum. And that's when DC brought out the Ouija board. He pulled it from his trunk and held it up in the car's headlights, letting it absorb the light to charge the board. It was a board that glowed in the dark, and neither Stephen nor any of his friends had any idea what was planned for the night, and they definitely have never used a Ouija board before. But all Stephen can remember thinking was, a glow-in-the-dark Ouija board made by Milton Bradley? I mean, this is supposed to be a serious investigation. Pulling out shit from the kids' toy section didn't help him or the boys take it more seriously. But hey, they don't know what the hell is going on, so they just played along. They would sit in a circle on the cold stone steps, the board placed between them. DC positioned himself slightly apart, leaning back against the massive mausoleum doors, watching. Stephen sat facing him, with his back to the rest of the cemetery. They began with simple questions.
Are there any spirits here? Can you give us a sign?
At first, the planchet moved slightly, but nothing convincing. Stephen suspected that someone might be nudging it, and judging by the others' expressions, they probably felt the same way. Then they asked for a name. And this time, the movement changed. It was sharper, intentional, jerking in a deliberate way that didn't feel like any of them were doing it. Stephen couldn't remember the exact name that it spelled out, only that it sounded Spanish or maybe even Latin. It wasn't a name that he would think any of them would come up with. An odd name. The next question was, they asked the spirit how it died. W-A-T-E-R. Water. A chill passed through the group. They asked if there were any other spirits there. Y-E-S. And that's when Steven's roommate pushed things a little too far. He had a brilliant idea to ask if anything bad was going to happen. The planchet moved again. Y-E-S. The atmosphere shifted instantly. A sudden cold swept over them. Stephen initially thought that it was just nerves, but then he saw his breath in the air, in the middle of fucking July. Everyone noticed at the same time, and from behind them, DC let out a low, knowing sound. Oh. Stephen looked up. DC was staring directly past him into the darkness behind his back. That is when the board started to spin. At this point, nobody was touching the board anymore. They had taken their hands off the planchet when the temperature dropped, and now the board was slowly turning all on its own. Everyone in the group froze, and then it began to spin around fully 3 times before it would come to a stop. Skeptical, Steven immediately checked the board, looking under it to see if there was something on the bottom, maybe a rock or something to help it spin around, hell, even a fishing line, to see if DC might have just been fucking with them. But there was nothing there, and that's when he felt it. A crushing weight dropped onto him, as if something unseen had wrapped around his body and pressed down with its full force. It didn't hurt. It was just pressure. Heavy, suffocating, impossible to ignore. And across from him, DC locked eyes with Steven, and he said, "You should go." There was no hesitation in his voice, just certainty. And Steven didn't even argue. He stood up and immediately left, taking 2 equally shaken friends with him. Later, the roommate would tell Steven what happened next. After Steven and his 2 homies left, they continued. They asked the spirit if it favored anyone in the group, and it responded with Steven's initials. They asked if he was the reason bad things were going to happen. Y-E-S. And then the board began spelling one word repeatedly. M-O-V-E. M-O-V-E. Each time it said move, they followed its instructions, leaving the mausoleum steps for the hood of the car, then to a bench, and then finally to a fountain. Only there did it stop, ending the session with a final goodbye. Afterward, DC explained what he had sensed from the start. Steven had been the one drawing something in. That was why he had been told to leave, not just for his own sake, but to prevent whatever had answered from attaching itself to him. Years later, one thing stayed with Steven more than anything else. That sudden, crushing weight. The unmistakable feeling that for a brief moment, something unseen had chosen him. Almost like the feeling of an extremely heavy, weighted blanket being thrown on him out of nowhere. From that night on, Steven never touched a Ouija board again. Story number 5. AOL was popular when I was 13 years old. A creepy story posted by an anonymous user. I'm going to take you back to a certain time. A time where you'd run across those little sleeves of CD-ROMs with a big American Online logo. 1,000 hours to surf the internet entirely for free at the speed of dial-up. Do you remember that sound you used to get when the AOL Instant Messenger message comes in? Do you remember? AIM was everything back then. Chat rooms, away messages, random conversations with strangers. It felt exciting, a little rebellious, and mostly harmless. Like a digital extension of passing notes in class, only bigger, louder, and far less controlled. At least that's what Chanel believed. The year was 2002. Chanel had just turned 13 years old and was in the 8th grade. She spent time in chat rooms alone or with friends, joking around, talking to people that they didn't know. There were risks, of course. Even at that age, she had already encountered things She shouldn't have. Unsolicited messages, inappropriate photos, but those felt like something you could avoid if you were careful about where you clicked or what chat room you entered. Chanel didn't have photos of herself online. Back then, and wow, I feel old saying this, it wasn't as simple as uploading photos from iCloud or your iPhone. You legit need a scanner or some sort of camera with a flip phone to get a picture of yourself online. And at 13 years old, she was self-conscious anyway. Hiding behind anonymity felt much safer. It was one day when a message would pop up. It was a boy named Dave. He was 19 years old and was from California. They connected over the chat, and at first it felt normal, easy. He was friendly, attentive, and quick to respond. And for a 13-year-old girl craving connection and validation, it didn't take long for their conversations to become routine. Messages turned into long chats, and long chats turned into something that felt important. There was just one problem. He wanted to know what she looked like. So of course, Chanel lied. She sent him pictures of a random chick she found online and claimed they were her. It felt harmless at the time, a way to keep his attention without exposing herself. I mean, how could he know anyway? It's not like he knew where she lived or could see who she was. And it worked. He believed her instantly. And as they connected more and more, he would tell her how special she was. How she was so mature. Different than the other chicks he dealt with in real life. But then eventually, things got a bit too real. He told her that he loved her. And at the age of 13, Chanel didn't fully grasp what that meant. Not in a way that triggered the kind of alarm that it should have. Instead, it felt flattering, exciting even. Someone older, someone who chose her. "Age ain't nothing but a number," he told her. In his eyes, she felt much more mature. Someone he could actually have a real relationship with. And for a while, the distance made it all feel safe. He lived far away. There was no real chance of actually meeting. Until there was. Dave told her that he and his mother were moving. Closer this time. A city only about an hour and a half away from Chanel. Suddenly, that's when shit got real. Dave wanted to take things off the chat logs. He was fed up with talking with her through the screen and never meeting in person. So he started persistently asking Chanel to meet, and then insisting, and then begging. He wanted to just go out for a movie, or do anything it would take to see her. The pressure built quickly, and the lie that she had told began to close in on her. Eventually, Chanel confessed that the photos weren't her. They were someone else. Dave was furious. Not disappointed, but furious. The reaction should have been a warning. A clear sign that something wasn't right. But a few days later, he returned. Calmer this time. Forgiving. "I still want to meet you," he told her.
"I love you."
That was exactly what Chanel needed to hear. And exactly what someone like him knew to say. And looking back, it was manipulation. But at the age of 13, it felt like devotion. Chanel told her best friend everything. The messages, the lie, the plan to meet him. Her friend agreed to go along with her to finally meet Dave. Together, they made an arrangement. He would simply make the drive over, and they would go to the movies together so that Chanel could meet what could possibly be the love of her life. I mean, Chanel was brainwashed to think that this was totally normal. Perhaps this was the fairy tale that would change her life, her Prince Charming coming to rescue her. Of course, she didn't tell her mother. and her mother didn't notice anything going on with her and anything about this Dave guy at all. So, the day arrived and Chanel's friend's mom picked him up from school, just like any other day. Chanel was so excited that she was finally going to meet the love of her life. Until her friend's mother said something that made her stomach drop into nothingness. "Chrissy, you're not going to go to the movies. You're not going to meet that man. You are going to get seriously hurt or kidnapped, and I can't allow you guys to go." The words hit Chanel like a damn earthquake. She cried and cried because she honestly thought everything would go well. Chanel cried hard. Not out of fear, but frustration. She believed she understood what she was doing. Believed that she was in control. She didn't think there was any harm in meeting Dave. Her friend's mother said that she was not going to tell her mom, and Chanel had promised to never speak to Dave again, and to never plan to meet a stranger online. That same day, Dave showed up. He waited for what felt like an eternity, hoping to meet the 13-year-old girl that he felt was mature enough for a real relationship. Mature enough to know what true love was, only to realize that Chanel would never arrive. Chanel would see his status turn online on AIM. The messages he sent were nothing like the ones before. Gone was the affection, the patience, the charm. In its place was anger, unpredictable, explosive, and terrifying in a way that she had never experienced. For the first time, Chanel saw him clearly, and for the first time, she understood how close he had come, and there's no telling what would have happened if her friend's mother allowed her to get out of that car to go see him.